Allô, c'est Vieux Farka Touré, vous écoutez WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Here at WGXC, who's operating on a much smaller budget than even the other public radio stations. So if anybody out there wants more bang for your buck to help out your local community, please consider donating to WGXC. It is tax deductible and really helps out your community. Again, if you're interested in doing that, the phone number is 518-6977-400, or to the more, standard people, 518-697-7400, and we will be happy to take any donation you would have for us.
It's called phone number rhythm.
Phone number rhythm.
Phone number rhythm. Gotta have it.
Nah, I could just say it any way I want. It's all the numbers.
Well, to the nerdiest of us, 7400 is a series of TTL gates that are the basis of the earliest computers. So, yeah, I don't have any trouble memorizing that number. It means a lot to me.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Delmar Wellness Center of Alesia, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC local news for Thursday, October 8th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org. More information about any of these stories. Kenneth C. Crow II is reporting for the Times Union that four people were arraigned October 7th in Columbia County Court on charges stemming from the assault that took place the night of July 4th and 5th at a private home in Kinderhook. Alex Rosenstrock, 37, a gym owner, his wife, Columbia County Sheriff's Deputy Kelly Briscoe Rosenstrock, Brian Hogg, 37, an IRS law enforcement agent, and Corey Gallard, 31, a contractor, were each indicted on felony counts of second-degree gang assault and first-degree unlawful imprisonment. It is alleged the quartet restrained and attacked Valesia resident and business owner Harold Handy during the party. The Rosenstrocks hosted the annual holiday party at their home at 3193 County Route 21, just outside of the village of Kinderhook. The case has drawn scrutiny as people question how the county sheriff could ethically investigate the incident, given the Rosenstrock's ties to area law enforcement. Many residents have spoken up in support of Handy, who owns Handy Repairs, an auto repair business. He was taken to Albany Medical Center Hospital after the assault due to the severity of his injuries. The State Police Special Investigations Unit eventually took over the investigation from the Sheriff's Office, working with District Attorney Paul Chaika. The case remains under investigation, Chaika said. Defense counsel said the case would show that Handy provoked the fights at the party. Judge Richard Kowiek signed an order of protection to keep the defendants away from Handy. All four were released on their own recognizance. Read more about this story in the Albany Times-Union. The Greene County Public Health Department announced 17 more COVID-19 cases in Greene County on October 7th. Lissa Harris of the River Newsroom reported that, quote, Greene County Public Health informs me that because they are at capacity for testing, they are currently only testing people who are symptomatic or who have a known COVID-19 positive contact, unquote. In all, there have been 41 new positive cases in Greene County, the county of about 47,000 residents, in the past week. On October 6th, 6.5%, or 13 of 198 people, tested positive for COVID-19. Of the 43 active cases there now, 31 traced to the Greene Correctional Facility, the state prison in Coxsackie. There were also cases reported in the last week at the 6th grade in the Greenville School and in the Greene County Office Building in Catskill. Meanwhile, Albany County reported 27 new COVID-19 cases on October 7th, according to the Times-Union. Columbia County, on the other hand, reported only one new coronavirus case on October 7th. Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that the New York chapter of the American Cancer Society October 7th warned that the latest statistics from the Department of Health show a large percentage of cancer survivors continue to smoke. 32% of New Yorkers between 18 and 44 who have received a cancer diagnosis are smoking, compared to 14% of those in the same age group who have never had a cancer diagnosis. For those between 45 and 64, 16% of cancer survivors smoke. Quote, "These numbers are truly appalling because despite already hearing the chilling words, you have cancer, dramatic numbers of New Yorkers are still dealing with a deadly tobacco addiction," unquote, said Julie Hart, the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network Senior Government Relations Director. Hart said the statistics indicate there must be a more aggressive approach to fighting smoking and called for an increase in the state's tobacco taxes. Quote, "Tobacco taxes are a win-win as they encourage smokers to quit and provide much-needed revenue," unquote, Hart said. However, New York has not raised most tobacco taxes in 10 years. Hart pushed for the state to increase the tax on tobacco products and to use that revenue to fund the Tobacco Control Program. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. And Bill Williams is reporting for Columbia Green Media that seven people are homeless following a fire in a two-family house in Acre October 6th. Caro Fire Department Chief Ray Femi said, "At approximately 6:44 p.m., Caro Fire Company was dispatched to 84 Old Route 23 after following reports that a house was on fire. When firefighters arrived, they reported a working structure fire and requested mutual aid assistance from neighboring companies and a Battalion 4 tanker response," Femi said. "The tanker response was canceled 10 minutes later when firefighters brought the fire under control," Femi said. "The fire started in a child's bedroom and began to spread before it was knocked down," Femi said. "No injuries were reported. Both families will be staying with relatives until repairs can be made to the home," Femi said. Round Top firefighters assisted at the fire scene along with Caro Ambulance and the Greene County Sheriff's Office. East Durham firefighters were on standby at their firehouse. Old Route 23 was closed to traffic in the area of the fire. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, sunny with a high near 58 degrees. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low of around 40 degrees. And on Friday, sunny with a high near 64 degrees. And Friday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 49. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Podcasts get made locally at WGXC.org, as all WGXC's locally produced programs can be subscribed to and found in all the usual podcasting places. Tune in for a mind-expanding radio from local news to a travelogue of sounds, either live at 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Paul and Liz of Kinderhook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
It's time again for WGXC's Pledge Drive. This time, essential radio is the theme. And we know that these days during the pandemic, not all of you have the means to make a donation to community radio. Those of you that do have the means to keep community voices on 90.7 FM, please do at wgxc.org/donate or call 518-697-7400. But if you do not have the means these days, there are still ways to help. For one, you could call our 3-minute phone line at 518-291-WGXC or 518-291-9492. Leave a 3-minute message about why community radio is important to you and why others should make a donation to WGXC. If you do have the means, by all means do become a sustainable supporter at WGXC.org/donate and help keep community radio on the air in your community. If you don't have the means, you can also amplify the WGXC Essential Radio Pledge Drive on social media by retweeting and liking and sharing posts about the WGXC Pledge Drive or about how to become a sustainable supporter at wgxc.org/donate. Please do what you can to help keep community voices on the air at 90.7 FM.
WGXC 90.7 FM, Aqua, Catskill, Hudson, New York, 90.7 FM. Listeners reported. It's radio for open ears, open heart, open hands, and open mind. We give thanks again to you for supporting WGXC all through the years, and then I hope that you stay with us.
On October 7th at the Columbia County Court, four people were arraigned on charges stemming from the assault that took place the night of July 4th and 5th at a private home in Kinderhook. Alex Rosenstrock, 37, a gym teacher, his wife, Columbia County Sheriff's Deputy Kelly Briscoe Rosenstrock, Brian Hogg, 37, an IRS law enforcement agent, and Corey Gallard, 31, a contractor, were indicted on felony counts of second-degree gang assault and first-degree unlawful imprisonment of the beating of Valencia resident and business owner Harold Handy at the party. Little information has come out about what happened that night, as law enforcement was involved. First, the Columbia County Sheriff's investigating themselves, then the investigation turned over to the state police. Lance Wheeler shot video outside the courthouse on October 7th and heard from defense attorneys defending their clients.
You know, it was unfortunate. It was a late night party. There were a lot of intoxicated people there. Some of the people that got, the individual that got injured, we believe precipitated and instigated and caused and got into a physical altercation with some people there. However, you have the right to defend yourself. So it is what it is, but this is a long story and the truth will out.
So, you know, going in today, what were you guys hoping maybe the next step in this?
Okay, we were going in hoping that there wouldn't be a gang assault. We were hoping that the charges would accurately reflect what we believe transpired at that evening. And there is a gang assault too, and we don't feel that that is reflective of what actually transpired that evening. And there's a lot of witnesses to that.
Well, like gang assault is very rare charge to be seen.
It is very rare, and it's usually when there's a gang, and it's usually when a gang does something. We don't have that in this case.
So obviously the next thing is in October, you know, it's virtually. Do you think that's going to be harder? I know that's...
The judge has indicated that the virtual does take longer, and with technological differences, and the New York State just changed who we're using as a software provider, it's not easy. It will get accomplished, and I'm confident that we will get all the discovery in due time.
And obviously, you've been saying it's been going on for a while, and all of the defendants seem to be from the area, have very well, good jobs, and
well-known and connected to the community, invested in the community, and have deep roots in the community.
Well, frankly, it's disturbing, the indictment that was presented here today against Kelly. There's allegations revolving a gang assault, which factually as well as legally doesn't fit. I'm not sure if anyone knows much about this, but at the time my client was 7 months pregnant, very pregnant. And the prosecution's theory on this is that the complainant in this case, who was a guest at a party, frankly got into two or three separate fights over the duration of 45 minutes. And what the prosecution here is trying to do is trying to say that because this individual who was combative fought with somebody minute one and then 45 minutes later got into another fight, they're now trying to lump this together as to be a gang assault. In order to be a gang assault, there has to be a shared mens rea, essentially a shared intent. One fight may not even known about the earlier fight. You know, there was some press-related information that I read that this individual had to be intubated because how bad his injuries are. When in actuality, what had occurred that this individual was so drunk and antagonistic with the medical professionals that he attempted to fight them in the ambulance and then was intubated based upon how combative and aggressive he was. So that's the type of case we're dealing with here. Those are the facts that, frankly, the media is not aware of. And unfortunately, because of the public outcry based upon misinformation, this indictment has been brought down. I don't think legally there is grounds to charge my client, a well-respected member of this community, as well as the Sheriff's Department, with the level of charges that they've been brought here. And she will vigorously defend this matter. I suspect it may not hold up to motion practice. So we will see. So thank you for your time.
As I indicated in court, my client, Mr. Haig, is in a very unique position here. He didn't know this individual before.
Thank you.
This individual was intoxicated. He was belligerent. He was abusive. My client responded as any being would, which is to defend himself in the face of attack. It's very straightforward. It's very simple. We shouldn't be here. We are. He looks forward to defending himself in court to explain the circumstances of this. We also have an intoxicated person who's seeking to profit off of this financially.
How's that?
He's made clear that he is looking for money and lots of money, and I think that aspect of this case will also be very important to understand his motives.
The gang assault is a very rare charge.
It is, yeah.
What do you think of that?
It's obviously a very serious charge. We're going to address whether we think it's appropriate in this case. In addition to the factual issues in this case, which I just mentioned, I think there's legal issues also. We're glad to be here. It's been out there for 3 months. A lot of rumor, a lot of innuendo, and unfortunately, what is on the internet is not only true and accurate, and we don't get a chance to address the truth of this case until we get to court. And from that point of view, my client, who believes in the system, as difficult as it is to be here, is glad that he has this opportunity.
So this is your president, feeling very strong, very sort of potent. So many steroids. The steroids, I think, are getting stronger from me. That's how strong I am. But I'm here to announce a very special offer, okay, from the Trump store. We are currently selling limited editions of Trump plasma. Trump plasma. I was talking to God last night, and he said, "Sir," and I said, "What do you want?" And he said, "I think, remember how we had the blood of Christ? Remember this?" And I said, "Yeah, okay, it was, I would have branded it a little better, but it's, a lot of people seem to think strongly of it." And he said to me, "What about the blood of Trump? Look how strong you are from COVID. Look how you beat the crap out of COVID." And I said, "You're right." So we're now selling Trump plasma on the Trump store, okay? 1 ounce, $5,000 an ounce, okay? And it's results guaranteed. That's not a legally binding statement, by the way. And it's such a great idea because, as I learned very strongly, Trump semen costs me money. Anytime I give a woman Trump semen, I either have to give her a check to make it go away, or I'm talking to you, Martha Maples, and my wife, Mesopotamia. It ends up being so costly. Okay, so that's a bad, I can admit, not the strongest business deal. When somebody orders Trump semen, it ends up costing me anywhere between $800 and $80 million. It's a total disaster. But Trump plasma, $5,000 an ounce, guaranteed to kick the COVID's ass, not a legally binding statement. So we'll see. We'll see what happens, but strong breathing, totally powerful.
Welcome back to the first presidential debate. Two queens stand before me. Gentlemen, before the time comes for you to lip sync for your lives, why don't we begin with some preliminary questions. Joe, how you doing?
Well, first of all...
Okay, I'm bored. Mr. President, here's a softball for you. Can I just get you to, if you don't mind, maybe condemn white supremacy real quick? Just... Maybe he didn't.
He just pours gasoline in the fire constantly.
Vice President Biden, you polls,
I'm doing better than any Republican has done in a long
guys, I just,
time.
Because
they saw what you did.
I'm having a panic attack.
You and me both.
Oh my God, Patti LuPone, what are you doing here? I'm busy.
When gay men are in crisis, I just materialize.
Patti, I'm getting nervous. What if this gets reelected?
Not you. You gotta think positive, doll. Imagine how much better life would be if Trump got dumped.
Shafted?
William Howard Tafted.
If Donald got fired, we could go back to life as we once knew it. Miserable and unfair, but at least without the daily threat of complete authoritarianism and apocalyptic destruction.
Wouldn't that be nice?
If Donald got fired according to plan, just think of the things I could do. I'd stop having nightmares about Kellyanne and finally sing songs about somebody new. If Donald got fired, be sublime. I'd put down my bottles and balls. I'd be back on Broadway and belting Sondheim instead of cheap internet parody songs.
Excuse me?
Nothing? If Donald got fired.
President Trump did a phenomenal job.
Donald, quit running your scam. There's nothing to tout.
You're no Abraham.
Donald, we're all in a jam. Please get the hell out and take Lindsey Graham. It would be so nice if he lost on election day.
I'd build him a new wall.
I'd pay for his new wall.
And I'd let Melania stay.
Really?
No. Oh, Donald, please go far away. There wouldn't be any more wreck, less old complainy dictator's regime.
He will destroy this country.
No more smug elites.
Whee! No more goddamn tweets.
Whee!
Fake news! Fake news!
Look, Daddy, I'm the worst president. Love me, love me.
Donald, the truth might be tough. The polls all project. We've all had enough.
Donald, don't stand there and scoff. With all due respect, please kindly f*** off.
I'm not gonna do that.
I hope we choose right. The future's so dark and unknown.
There's nothing we cannot do if we do it together.
But there's no deciding. I'm riding with Biden.
I'm voting for Patti LuPone.
Yes, Queen!
O'Donnell! 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 Just leave us alone!
Patti, I'm scared.
Girl, just go.
Yes, I am the fly in.
9 to 6 eyes, I got a garbage brain that's driving me insane. And I don't like the ride, so push that pesticide. And baby, I won't care, cause baby, I don't scare. Cause I'm a reborn maggot using gym warfare. Rock.
There seemed to be a fly in your soup, Mr. Waiter. There seems to be a fly in the soup. That joke is so old that, archaeologists are still shaking their heads. No? All right. You're not listening to the radio. You're listening to the internet, which is also the radio, but here we are. After the storm and all kinds of storms are still brewing, the president won't do a virtual debate like they did in 1960. That's the news this morning, because he wants to infect Joe Biden. He tried once and failed, maybe, and wants to try again. I'm Tom Rowe, and Acre, you are not listening to the radio, but you are listening to the radio. Steve Reich on 90.7 FM or on WGXC.org. You're listening to the radio WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra. It's time for the coronavirus report from the River Newsroom. Go to therivernewsroom.com for more information about anything in this report. New York State is locking down again, at least in a few hotspots. The state will impose new restrictions and temporary closings on schools, houses of worship, gatherings, and businesses in parts of Rockland County, town of Ramapo, and the Orange County town of Palm Tree, along with several Brooklyn and Queens neighborhoods, unless strictly in the greater Binghamton area. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced the limited lockdowns in a surprise October 6th briefing. Dubbed the Cluster Action Initiative, the governor's new orders are set to take effect by October 9th, mostly in communities with large Orthodox Jewish populations, and have already caused confusion and uproar in the neighborhoods most affected. While Cuomo has been using zip codes to talk about infection rates in New York's hotspots for more than a week of rising case counts, the zones will not be zip code based. Instead, the state has developed heat maps based on the actual addresses of infections, drawing red, orange, and yellow zones around them, with the strictest restrictions in the center of the maps. Cuomo's office has not given out details on the exact methodology used to create the maps, although Rockland and Orange County officials said in a video briefing after the governor's announcement on October 6th that they had some input on the process. Protest against Cuomo's orders erupted overnight in Brooklyn, where Hasidic protesters were especially angered by the governor's decision to limit religious services to no more than 10 people in the red zones, regardless of building capacity, and ban all other gatherings entirely. A 34-year-old Hasidic man who has been advocating in the community for masks and safety measures was beaten unconscious by a crowd in Borough Park, the city reports. The protests are just one facet of a deeper community division. Some rabbis and doctors among the Hasidic and Orthodox communities of New York State have publicly called for better public health compliance in the community in recent weeks. Official responses from the Orthodox community to Cuomo's hotspot order have also been mixed. A statement put out on October 6th by legislators representing New York City's Orthodox neighborhoods condemned the governor's actions as a surprise attack on the community, striking a defiant tone. Quote, "Americans are constitutionally permitted to worship freely, and Governor Cuomo may be assured that we intend to exercise that right without his interference. God bless America," they wrote, unquote. On October 7th, the New York Jewish Agenda released a letter signed by a group of 300 rabbis from both Orthodox and other Jewish traditions in support of public health efforts taken by the governor and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. Quote, "The posturing of religious freedom in opposition to the well-being of individuals and communities is blasphemy," unquote, the signatories wrote. Quote, "Requiring masks and physical distancing for all gatherings, including religious gatherings, is not anti-Semitism," unquote. In a very short October 7th briefing, Cuomo addressed the backlash in fairly vague terms. Quote, "To the extent there are communities that are upset, that's because they haven't been following the original rules," unquote, Cuomo said. Quote, "That's why the infection spread," unquote. There's some logic to New York State not using zip codes to draw the hotspot maps. A mapping expert, Matt Forrest, explains they're not really land areas, they're postal routes. For their part, state officials are defending the decision with science, saying that they are able to tailor the shape of the zones based on actual infection locations rather than arbitrary borders. But the decision not to use zip codes to draw the hotspot zones has wreaked havoc in New York City, where zone borders in the maps released by the state October 6th cut through streets and parcels in a deeply confusing way. For instance, about a third of Brooklyn's Greenwood Cemetery, a popular gathering place for people who are already dead, was located in an orange zone, and the other two-thirds in a yellow zone. Maps posted Wednesday afternoon on October 7th on the State Empire Development Corporation website, along with the updated hotspot guidance, appear to have been touched up to address some of these issues. The borders of the zones now conform better to streets, and Greenwood is no longer divided into different zones. The county executive of Rockland and Orange County praised Cuomo's actions on October 6th in public video briefings, with Rockland's Ed Day and Orange's Steve Newhouse said that they had urged Cuomo's team not to use zip codes because it allows them to draw zones in a way that hurts fewer businesses around the outbreaks. Not explicitly stated, but heavily implied, the Hudson Valley execs want to draw tight borders around local Orthodox communities. Quote, I had a lot of businesses in the town of Monroe, restaurants, stores that didn't want to get penalized for being in 10950, unquote, Newhouse said. The 10950 zip code spans two towns, Monroe and Palm Tree, created by a voter referendum in 2017 when the Satmar community of Curious Joel essentially seceded from Monroe. Hospitalizations as well as cases are on the rise in New York State, driven by uptick in hotspots. In his October 7th briefing, Cuomo said that 20% of the new hospitalizations in the state over the past 2 weeks were coming from the top 20 hotspot zip codes, which represent about 6.7% of the state's population. Testing numbers are also on rising statewide. New York State conducted almost 134,000 tests on last Friday, a pandemic record. The Democrat and Chronicle had a story October 6th about the growth of the state's testing infrastructure, which continues to add new test sites and options for New Yorkers looking to get tested. The New York State Department of Health maintains a searchable database of test sites on the state website, where you can find a test provider near you. For several briefings in a row, Cuomo has blasted local governments for not enforcing state pandemic guidelines. In Rockland and Orange County hotspots, where plans for stepping up enforcement are still being hammered out, the New York State Police will take the lead, Day and Newhouse said on October 6th. New York Post reported on October 7th that New York City hasn't yet fined anyone for not wearing a mask. The state-run MTA, which is in charge of New York City's subway system, has issued just 7 tickets. Frankly, we aren't aware of any municipality in New York State that has fined an individual for not wearing a mask. River readers, if you know of any instances, please send them to us. Worth noting, amid Cuomo's push for more police action on pandemic violations, New York State jails have an ongoing COVID-19 problem. Advocates say we don't really know the scope of it because inmates aren't being tested enough. In the October 6th testing, Broome County had a much higher positivity rate than any other hotspot county, worrying 6.1%, with Rockland next at 4.5% and Orange at 3.9%. But the outbreak in the Binghamton area is more spread out. No single Broome County zip code has made the state's top 20 list for positivity rates in recent state announcements. The hotspot map drawn around parts of Binghamton, Johnson City, Endicott, and Endwell contains no red or orange zones, only a yellow precautionary zone where some restrictions on houses of worship and dining apply, and schools will have to carry out regular testing of students and staff. Quote, it's unclear if the map includes addresses in Vestal, unquote, the Binghamton Press and Sun Bulletin reports. Broome County reporters, we feel your pain. This week's must-read, a five-page letter to CDC Director Robert Redfield from the agency's former director, Bill Foge, who urged Redfield in late September to spill the beans on the White House's mismanagement of the pandemic and resign. Quote, don't shy away from the fact that this has been an unacceptable toll on our country. It is a slaughter and not just a political dispute, unquote, Foge wrote. The vice presidential debate was last night, and infection experts think the minimal precautions being taken are pretty hilarious, especially given that Vice President Mike Pence has been recently exposed to COVID-19 and should be in quarantine under the federal government's own guidelines. One aerosol expert, Donald Milton of the University of Maryland, recommended that debate organizers run some box fans with air filters taped to them, a setup that, by the way, you can make at home for about $50, or less if you already have a box fan lying around. On October 7th, BuzzFeed pulled its reporter from the White House press pool, which has become a very dangerous place for reporters and their families. The White House outbreak is looking increasingly dangerous for regular old citizens, too. Dozens of housekeepers and other non-political staff are still at work at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, as well as Secret Service agents. Beyond the grounds of the first residence, a USA Today report found that the White House COVID outbreak may have exposed at least 6,000 people from Atlanta to Minnesota. White House is refusing to allow the CDC to do contact tracing on the outbreak, and some epidemiologists are concerned that they may be because patient zero might be the president himself. The FDA adopted tougher new vaccine guidelines aimed at beefing up data on safety and effectiveness before any vaccine is given emergency authorization, shortly after the New York Times reported that the White House was blocking the adoption of stricter standards. The historically even stodgily apolitical science publications Nature and the New England Journal of Medicine waded into the election fray this week, publishing editorial letters warning that the Trump administration is a danger to science, research, and public health. The New England Journal of Medicine's editorial didn't mention the president by name. Nature, though, went there. The Quote, the conventions that have guided the relationship between science and politics are under threat, and nature cannot stand by in silence, unquote, the journal's editors wrote. Negotiations in Congress over a broad coronavirus stimulus bill have apparently collapsed in the wake of a single tweet on October 6th from President Trump, which also sent the stock market into a brief nosedive. The market pulled out of freefall again when the president began tweeting a different tune, urging lawmakers to pass piecemeal chunks of aid. On October 7th, Cuomo said he's waiting on either a Biden win or a Senate flip to the Democrats to deal with the state's ballooning budget problems. Quote, you're going to know in less than a month, unquote, the governor told reporters in a telephone briefing. Quote, any action you take will cause damage, so I'd rather wait to find out what the facts are before we make such an impactful decision, unquote. Facing a $50 billion budget hole, Cuomo has resisted calls to either make massive cuts to state spending or increase taxes on New York's wealthy, insisting that the state's budget problems are the federal government's to solve. New Mexico was added to New York's travel advisory on October 6th. Governor Cuomo announced a second round of funding totaling some $423,000 to behavioral health providers to purchase and install equipment for additional addiction telehealth services statewide. Now, the region by region roundup. And we start with the lower Hudson Valley, where the cluster restrictions in Rockland County will go into effect at 12:01 a.m. October 9th. County Executive Ed Day announced in a press release, details on the enforcement are still forthcoming from the governor's office. Day said that the county would share that information as soon as it's available. The current cluster zone map is available at rcklnd.us. LowHUD.com addresses the lingering questions of enforcement in the cluster zones, which has caused some confusion among local officials. The partial lockdown will go into effect Friday, but as of Wednesday, Ramapo Supervisor Michael Specht said that, quote, the town has yet to receive any specific directives, unquote, from the governor's office, including what role the local police play in enforcing the new protocols. Clarkstown Supervisor George Homan, meanwhile, said that he was, quote, informed by county officials that enforcement would primarily come from New York State Police, State Liquor Authority, and State Health Department staff, unquote. Given Cuomo's repeated lambasting of local officials for the outbreaks in the first place, the lack of clear instruction is not a little ironic. In the Mid-Hudson Valley, in a video briefing October 7th, Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse told county residents to prepare for possible rollbacks of visitations at hospitals, nursing homes, and other facilities that might be forthcoming as New York State works to tamp down outbreaks in the county and elsewhere. If you have a loved one in an institution or group home or a nursing home, I would be setting up some type of communication system if that facility doesn't already have one, he said. Orange County will hold two drive-through job fairs on Wednesday, October 14th and Thursday, October 15th from noon to 3 p.m. That's at the Orange County Career Center and the Armory Unity Center. Rhinebeck and Kingston canceled their Sinterklaas Festival. In the Catskills, Greene County Public Health, which has been providing public COVID-19 testing at its office in Catskill, is currently at capacity for testing local residents and is reserving testing for people who have symptoms or have been in contact with someone who is known to be COVID positive. County health worker confirmed the restrictions on testing over the phone October 7th to a River reporter. We have reached out to Greene County Public Health leadership for more information. Greene County's testing bottleneck is apparently being caused by recent outbreaks. In a Facebook post late Wednesday, county public health officials said the county currently had 43 known active cases, 31 of which have been traced to the Greene Correctional Facility in Coxsackie, a state prison. Another case has been found at the Greenville Middle School, resulting in new quarantines and contact tracing. 102 county residents are currently in quarantine after having been exposed. This has been the coronavirus report from the River Newsroom. Go to therivernewsroom.com for more information about anything you heard in this report. Thank you.
to each of the three live web streams that WGXC has to listen to the weather outside. First, we'll hear the test site of Acoustica Commons with the microphone live in the Wave Farm Woods. Then we'll hear Zach Poff's pond station, microphones or hydrophones, in the bottom of the Wave Farm pond. Then we'll hear Quintron's Weather Warlock, a live stream of an analog drone synthesizer played by the changes in the weather, the changes in snow, the rain, precipitation, the changes in the sunlight, the changes in wind, and the changes in temperature make the sound. We're hearing all three now, but next we're going to sample them one by one. First, the test site of Acoustic Commons, then Zach Poff's Pond Station, then the Weather Warlock. On the radio at WGXC.org. Go anytime there to listen.
Rachel T.
Hi, I'm Eva.
Hi, I'm Rachel G.
We are all Girl Scouts, and this is WGXC ACRA.
Here at WGXC, who's operating on a much smaller budget than even the other public radio stations. So if anybody out there wants more bang for your buck to help out your local community, please consider donating to WGXC. It is tax deductible and really helps out your community. Again, if you're interested in doing that, the phone number is 518 69, 77, 400, or to the more, I don't know, standard people, 518-697-7400, and we will be happy to take any donation you would have for us.
It's called phone number rhythm.
Phone number rhythm.
Phone number rhythm. Gotta have it.
Nah, I could just say it any way I want. It's all the numbers.
Well, to the nerdiest of us, 7400 is a series of TTL gates that are the basis of the earliest computers. So, yeah, I don't have any trouble memorizing that number. It means a lot to me.
The deadline for replying to the 2020 census is approaching. If you have not already submitted your responses, there's still time. It's quick and easy to do, and you can respond online. Libraries offer public computers and free internet access to help make sure you are counted. Make certain you count everyone living in your home, including newborns and young children. It's safe and secure. The U.S. Census Bureau keeps your answers confidential. The information you provide will have a direct impact on funding for libraries, schools, public transportation, Head Start, housing assistance, and more. 2020census.gov.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for October the 8th, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. Senator Kamala Harris delivered a swift condemnation of the Trump administration handling of the pandemic during the opening of Wednesday's vice presidential debate, noting that some 210,000 people have died and more than 7.5 million people have contracted the disease. That from CNN. They quote Harris as saying the American people have witnessed what is the greatest failure of any presidential administration in the history of our country. Harris argued further that frontline workers have been treated like sacrificial workers and that President Trump had repeatedly minimized the seriousness of the virus while discouraging people from wearing masks. CNN notes that Pence admitted that our nation has gone through a very challenging time this year, although he insisted from the very first day President Trump has put the health of America first. A court ruling opened the opportunity for Arizonans who are isolated because of COVID-19 to use a video call to vote in the November elections.
The decision will allow persons in hospitals or nursing homes who are unable to cast their vote in person to video conference with their county's special elections board, which will assist them by marking their choices, then certifying and submitting their ballot. AARP Arizona State Director Dana Kennedy says she doesn't see why anyone would consider it a problem.
We were actually a little surprised when all of a sudden this became a political fight. Everybody was willing to embrace technology when families couldn't visit their loved ones in facilities. So why is it that we wouldn't want to embrace technology to basically help people vote?
Attorney General Mark Brnovich sued after Governor Doug Ducey sent a letter opposing virtual voting, claiming it's not allowed under Arizona law. But a state superior court judge disagreed, ruling that federal law requires reasonable accommodations for voters with disabilities. Mark Richardson reporting.
Only 44 people voted by video in Arizona's primary elections this year, but a record turnout is expected in November. Meantime, Nebraskans have until Friday, October the 16th to register to vote in an election that will also decide who fills U.S. Senate and House seats, 25 unicameral seats, and initiatives on gambling and predatory lending.
Gavin Geis with Common Cause Nebraska says while presidential candidates get a lot of attention during general elections, it's important to dig into who is running at the local level.
But at the end of the day, it's the people that represent the individual communities in Nebraska that have the biggest impact. And so my recommendation is that people know more about the legislative races, the local Nebraska legislative races, and understand who they're voting for.
To register online, visit the Secretary of State's website at sos.nebraska.gov. I'm Eric Galatas.
This is PNS. Water systems across North Carolina in need of repair, yet local government budgets are shrinking amid the economic fallout from the pandemic.
The last major infrastructure package passed by lawmakers expired on September 30th, and experts say rural communities who already have been hard hit by the coronavirus recession need more investment. Charles Anderson of Resource Institute says local governments in rural areas have fewer tax dollars to rely on for upgrades. He says money available for waterway restoration and infrastructure work often is in the form of loans.
And a lot of it been loan money, and that means that if a city or town wants to improve their water resources, they have to go out here and get a loan to do that. And a lot of these communities just don't have the resources to go out here and borrow that money.
Anderson believes boosting the number of grants available to rural governments could help. One Pew study found the nation's water systems are on the cusp of needing $100 billion worth of repairs and maintenance. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
On the heels of another summer plagued by dangerous heat, drought, and fires, some of Colorado's top leaders are speaking out against the rollback of clean car standards.
Just as the COVID-19 pandemic took over the country, the EPA finalized a rule reversing course on Obama-era vehicle emission standards, which aimed to reduce vehicle emissions that contribute to climate change. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser contends the move rejects sound science and undermines Colorado's authority to set standards higher than the federal government's.
Under lots of administrations, people played by the rules. You could plan on the rules and you could make decisions. But now they're seeking to change the rules in the middle of the game for us, to put us and our land, air, and water at risk.
Weiser says that's why Colorado is among the nearly two dozen states challenging the rollback in federal court. Mary Sherman reporting.
And finally, our Eric Tegadoff tells us that the recipe for restoring the West Sagebrush Sea could involve pasta makers.
A project stewing in Idaho and four other western states is testing a new method for replanting sagebrush and other native brunch grasses. Matt Cahill with the Nature Conservancy says invasive grasses such as cheatgrass are a major threat to the habitat, especially because they drive wildfires. He says restoration currently requires big interventions to seed the landscape.
But unfortunately, that restoration, it's not often successful. This is a hard ecosystem to restore. There's not a lot of water. Just challenging. And so we're trying to design approaches that help our partners in government and other nonprofits.
More than 350 species depend on the unique sagebrush habitat of the West. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported on great radio stations across the nation and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Ryan Taranelli is reporting for the New York Law Journal that the League of Women Voters of New York State is attempting to extend the October 9th deadline to register to vote in New York. The group is appealing a decision last month from a New York State judge who denied a preliminary injunction extending the registration deadline. The group argued in court documents filed October 6, and I quote, "The trial court turned a blind eye to the reality that thousands of New Yorkers who will register after the 25-day deadline and will be blocked from casting a valid ballot based on an outdated law with no current justification. If preliminary relief is not granted, tens of thousands of New Yorkers will miss the registration deadline for a critical election in November," end quote. Last month, Judge J. Michelle Sweeting rejected a preliminary injunction to extend the deadline. Sweeting wrote, and I quote, "There is simply no showing here that the failure to grant the injunction would necessarily deprive any eligible voter of the right to vote, as any eligible voter could simply register to vote by the legal deadline," end quote. Read more about this story in the New York Law Journal. WMHT will host a live debate between only two of the candidates running for the 19th Congressional District seat at 8 p.m. October 15th. Candidates Stephen Greenfield and Victoria Alexander are not invited to the event. Representative Antonio Delgado, the incumbent Democrat, and Republican challenger Kyle Van De Water will be the only candidates at the event. Alexander is running on the Libertarian Party line, and Greenfield is running with the Green Party. Ola Hawatme, who lost the Republican primary election, seems to also be running a stealth write-in campaign for this election. The debate from the WMHT studios in Troy will also be broadcast on WAMC Radio with Dan Clark, host of the statewide public affairs program New York Now on PBS, as moderator. Ed McKinley from the Times Union and Allison Dunn from WAMC will ask questions of two of the four candidates on the ballot. The debate is the same day as the second presidential debate, so it should not have as many viewers and listeners as if it was held on another day. Amanda Freeze is reporting for Capital Confidential. The Upstate Jobs Party has endorsed a bipartisan trio of state legislative candidates ahead of the November general election. The party this week announced its support for Republican State Senator Daphne Jordan, Senate Republican candidate Rich Amador, candidate for the 46th Senate District seat, and Democrat State Assembly member Angelo Santabarbara. Martin Babinek, founder of the Upstate Jobs Party and a former congressional candidate, said these candidates will help further the party's agenda, which includes reforming the economic development system, overhauling the education system, supporting the innovation economy, and seeking comprehensive government reform. The Upstate Jobs Party was founded in 2016 by Babinek, and in 2017, the party supported independent candidate Ben Walsh, who was elected Syracuse mayor on the third party line. In 2018, three of the four state legislators the party supported were elected, and in six out of seven people endorsed by the party in local elections won in 2019. Jordan received the party's endorsement in 2018, and you can read the full story at Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. Spectrum News is reporting longtime State Senate Majority Leader Joseph Bruno has died. He was 91 years old. Bruno served as Senate Majority Leader from 1994 to 2008. His death was confirmed early October 7th by a spokesman. In response to the news, New York GOP head Nick Langworthy tweeted, and I quote, "A true man of the people, he brought his boxing spirit, charm, and wit to everything he did," end quote. Bruno was once one of the powerful, and I quote, "three men in the room," end quote, during the Pataki administration. The Republican served in the Senate for more than 30 years, representing Rensselaer County. In 2009, he was convicted on federal corruption charges, but his conviction was overturned on appeal. He was acquitted following a retrial. A native of Glen Falls, Bruno attended St. Mary's and Skidmore College. His political career began in 1966 when he served on the campaign staff of Governor Nelson Rockefeller. Bruno played a significant role in the expansion of Albany International Airport. He advocated for high-speed rail in New York and was instrumental in bringing the Tri-City Valley Cats to town. Joe Bruno Stadium in Troy is named in his honor. And you can read the full story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, sunny with a high near 58 degrees. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low of around 40 degrees. And on Friday, sunny with a high near 64 degrees. And Friday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 49. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for Open Ears in Greene and Columbia Counties.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, October 8th. Beware of fallen branches this morning, and for the rest of the fall season, be aware of wet leaves. They are every bit as dangerous as ice. Mid-40s kick off the day as crews clean up and restore power lost yesterday. A lot of people across Greene and Columbia counties are still without power as of this morning. Things are calmer today with a high of 62 and some wind gusts this afternoon, but at 25 miles per hour, it won't be nearly as destructive as yesterday. Overnight, we dip down into the upper 30s. Some remaining plants may need to be covered. Tomorrow, things are calmer and a little warmer with a high of 65 degrees. Weekend gets a bit moist. High 70s on Saturday with some light afternoon rain. Sunday, same. More afternoon rain, but highs only in the 60s. The next high tides will be at 7:47 a.m. and at 7:30 p.m. The next low tides will be at 1:21 p.m. and tomorrow at 2:59 a.m. Water temperature will be 64 degrees. Sunset today will be at 6:03 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7 a.m. Looking way up, we see two near-Earth objects are expected today, the largest of which is 51 meters wide, a similar energy load to the asteroid that caused the Tunguska explosion in Russia. Solar wind speed is currently 391 kilometers per second at 3.9 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is too quiet. There have been 12 days since the last sunspot. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate. You hear that? That utter lack of advertising that other stations assault your ears with? Here at WGXC, we have real, unsolicited opinions. Help keep the course of truth going by heading on over to WGXC.org to donate.
Hi, everybody. This is Jeff, host of Snack Point Charlie.
And I'm Alana, host of There There.
Wave Farms WGXC needs your financial support. In these extraordinary and unprecedented times, we know there are many worthy organizations in need. We hope that you consider Wave Farm among them.
If you value WGXC and want to keep it a part of your daily life, we ask that you make a tax-deductible contribution to keep local and adventurous content freely available on the Upper Hudson Valley radio dial.
Please visit WGXC.org. That's WGXC.org. Click donate and become a monthly sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation.
Thank you so much for keeping independent voices and sounds on your radio dial.
WGXC 90.7 FM, Aqua, Catskill, Hudson, New York, 90.7 FM. Listeners reported. It's radio for open ears, open heart, open hands, and open mind. We give thanks again to you for supporting WGXC all through the years, and I hope that you stay with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. for Media.
Tiny bloofs and flame.
Rabbi Mundurla. Shanteen Agaf.
These dragonadal.
Are a rider with
We've been listening to Matmos, and before that, Van Halen on the WGXC Morning Show. I'm Tumber live in Accra. Next, we have a report from Kate Leone of Citizen Action New York about the possibility of paid sick day law being passed in New York. This report comes from WOOC, our partner station in Troy.
Hello, I'm speaking with Kate Leone from Citizen Action of New York. Welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, Kate. How are you today?
I am doing great. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. For the listeners, can you tell us about Citizen Action of New York and what do you do at Citizen Action?
Sure. Citizen Action New York is a grassroots organization that mobilizes people power to take on big issues like housing inequity, mass incarceration, and worker and gender justice, which is where I work. So in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, which put workers at a higher risk at work, we launched the Worker Rights Outreach Project to make sure that people who are exposed to COVID at work know their rights, that they understand the benefits that they can tap into to help them through these difficult times, and resources available. New York State actually has some of the most comprehensive paid leave policies in the nation, and that's thanks to massive advocacy efforts from my colleagues at Citizen Action New York and our allies. But a survey conducted by the Community Service Society, one of our partners, showed that only 32% of New York City workers were actually aware that they had state-granted paid leave. So obviously, worker education is needed. It's important that we have strong laws to protect our workers, but it's also important that people actually know about the laws, know their rights, and how to use them. So a main part of what I do is educate workers about their rights on the job and their benefits like paid leave that can give them some really crucial support to help them out during this COVID-19 pandemic. And then the other thing I do is speak with people who are working during this crisis and listen to their stories and get to know them so that I can have a sense of what workers are facing in this moment and really lift up the voices of working people when we think about crafting policy, because workers know what workers need. That's what I do.
That is great work. And talking about that, the New York State 2020 budget finally passed the much-needed permanent paid sick days law that ensure that most workers in New York State will have the right to earn and use paid sick time each year. So I know, based on your response, and I am also very familiar with Citizen Action, you work diligently to make sure that this policy passes in New York State. When is the paid sick day policy effective?
So there are actually a few different policies that New Yorkers can now use for paid time off, and I can tell you about each of them. But the New York paid safe and sick day policy that you're speaking about, it started accrual for folks. So people started earning their sick days on September 30th, 2020. And folks can actually start using their accrued paid sick and safe time on the first day of the new year, so January 1st, 2021. I'm happy to talk through the different sorts of paid leave policies. It's a little complicated.
Let's just focus on the basic day that went into effect on September 30th. How many days a year will the worker be able to take per year? How many hours?
So for the paid sick and safe days, it's at least 5 days per year. And whether the number of days depends on the size of your employer and their annual revenue, but at least 5 days per year. Employees who work for employers with 100 employees or over get 56 hours of paid leave. So even if you have a large employer, you'll get even more days. If your employer has fewer than 100 employees, then you will get 5 days or 40 hours of paid sick leave. But if your employer has fewer than five employees, but they have a net income of over 1 million, so they don't have a lot of employees, but they are netting a lot of money, and then they still have to give you the 40 hours of paid sick leave. If you work for an employer that has fewer than five employees and a net income of less than 1 million, so they have few employees and they have a lower net income, then you still get 5 days of leave, but they can give it unpaid.
Does this work for exempt and non-exempt, or let's say for nonprofit versus corporations, or full-time and part-time? I mean, everybody equally will be able to access this, or there is a difference?
That's correct. Nonprofits are not exempt from the policy, so that means they have to grant their employees with these safe and sick days as well.
will vary according to business size, or I'm a little confused.
So it varies according to business size. I know I gave a lot of details there. But yes, business size and the net income of the business.
Can the basic days be used to seek services that indirectly might make a person not able to work? For example, if I'm a passenger in a car accident, I'm not sick, but based on this, I have to take a sick day because I have to get checked. Will that be considered something that a person will be able to take as a sick pay? Okay.
And I can give a few details on that, but the safe day component of this law provides paid time off for various situations beyond just your own illness, including getting preventative treatment or care. And also if you're absent related to like some of the scenarios you mentioned, also if you're a victim of domestic violence, sexual offense or stalking or human trafficking, and you need the day in order to be safe.
Okay. So will that the employee, basically the employer will be requiring for paperwork to prove this, I guess?
Yeah, I think there's likely some documentation involved.
And what about employees that are the main caretaker for a child or a parent that is sick?
Yeah, you can use these days for that too. So if you have to miss work due to a covered family member's illness or injury or their medical care, or if they're a victim of domestic violence or stalking or those other sort of situations, and you need to care for them, you can use the days. It does have to be a covered family member, and the law has a pretty broad definition of covered family members.
Based on what you're saying, the sick pay days policy or law provides with some security for working families. That will be a day that people are not losing their job because they're sick and they still have to continue working. And also, like in this situation with COVID spreading the virus, so instead they can stay home and be safe. There is anything else that you would like to say that I have not asked you?
In response to COVID-19, both the state and federal government passed emergency COVID leave programs. So this leave is an addition to the paid sick and saved days. It's in addition to New York State paid family leave, which is a whole nother policy giving everybody 12 weeks of leave. This is emergency COVID leave and is meant to support people affected by COVID-19. So the federal leave covers more situations in the state. You can either use federal or state depending on what coverage group you're in. And for the federal leave, you can use it if you are sick with COVID, quarantined during COVID, or if you need to care for others who are sick, quarantined, or you can also use it, the federal emergency COVID leave, if you need to care for children due to school closures, remote learning, or hybrid learning, which a lot of people are dealing with right now. The state leave is more restrictive because it can only be used for the employee's own illness or to care for a minor dependent child with COVID, and also so the state leave, if you're using that policy, you have to get an official order of quarantine, which is a process. But the state leave covers more people. So at this point, most workers in our state are eligible for some type of emergency COVID leave. And we can, at Citizen Action, direct folks to the right resources to figure out their coverage. We are actually having an event tomorrow. It's an interactive online training for folks in the Capital District to learn more about their rights and benefits in the workplace. So a deeper dive into all the things I've been discussing. It's called Clocking In During COVID, What Working Families Should Know. And it's happening at 6:30 tomorrow, which is Thursday, October 8th. And the event details and registration info are listed on the event page of the Citizen Action New York website. And they're also up on the Citizen Action New York Instagram. And we also have a resource page that you can go to if you can't make it to the training tomorrow at 6:30. If you go to the Citizen Action New York website and go to citizenactionnewyork.org/paid-sick-leave/, you'll find a page with tons of fact sheets and resources about the different types of leave.
Kate, thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for taking the time to talk with us.
For sure. Thank you, Aileen. It's been a pleasure.
We're talking with Peter Lavigne, who is one of the state co-chairs of the Green Party of New York State. Green Party is running our own Howie Hawkins from New York State for president. I've helped Howie out in some of his prior races. But a new twist this year, in the past you needed 50,000 votes for governor in order to keep your ballot status as a party for 4 years. But that's been changed in New York. So Peter, can you explain what the new rules are?
Yeah, so the new rules were passed during the budget negotiations back in the spring. And
this has something to do with the budget?
Yeah, so last year the governor had convened a commission to study changing ballot access laws, well, really to study public finance and potentially instituting a system of campaign finance funded by the public. And what it ended up doing really was setting up kind of a really weak system of public campaign finance, but it tried to change ballot access laws so that it was much more difficult to retain ballot access. Now, back in the spring, a judge struck down that commission, saying that it was kind of an usurpation of power of the legislature. And what Governor Cuomo did was kind of insert the recommendations of that commission into the budget during the pandemic, essentially saying that we needed to change ballot access laws in the middle of the worst health and economic crisis of the last century. And so what, that the changes essentially ended up being were, we went from needing 50,000 votes for our gubernatorial candidate every 4 years. Now we need either 130,000 votes or 2% of the vote, whichever is higher, every 2 years, once for president and once for governor. So with the stroke of a pen, the legislature and the governor made it much more difficult for parties like the Green Party to maintain ballot access.
Now, New York is unusual in that it allows what's called fusion voting. Mm-hmm. So Cuomo, 4 different times, first when he ran for attorney general, but the last 3 times when he ran for governor, he's allowed to appear on more than one ballot line. And so these other parties, like the Working Families Party in particular, just sort of cross-nominate the Democrat in order to get their, in the past 50,000 votes. The Green Party doesn't. It runs its own candidate. How does that going to make it more difficult, or does it, for the Green Party to get its ballot status this year?
Yeah, the Green Party doesn't cross-nominate. What we want to do is nominate our own candidate. We want to run and build the Green Party. We're not interested in endorsing corporate parties like the Democrats or Republicans. And what that typically has meant is that it has been a bit more difficult for us to gain and maintain ballot status. We had it from 98 to 02, and then again from 2010 until now. We lost it between 02 and 2010. And our own Howie Hawkins, who's running for president, was the one that helped us get it back. But I think this year the problem is twofold. One, during a presidential race, it's difficult to get people to consider voting for a candidate like Howie Hawkins. In the best of times, they don't often want to vote for other party candidates. There's very much an idea in the United States that, only the Democrat or Republican can win. So why vote for, the Green candidate? And I think also people just don't know that the law has been changed. I talk to a lot of people trying to convince them to vote for the Green Party and for Howie, and they're often very surprised that the law has been changed. This is not something that's been front and center in most people's minds. The media has done some stories about it, but I think as we go into November, most people still don't know that if we don't get that 130,000 or 2%, that the Green Party could disappear. And the same thing for any other party, the Libertarian Party, for instance, could also disappear if they don't get the votes. So it's difficult.
Now, it's probably worthwhile pointing out that this sort of party suppression, voter suppression, remove choices from the voters was entirely done by the Democrats behind closed doors in the budget during the pandemic, since this is what the legislature, once it became controlled entirely by the Democrats, did. Presumably, if the Republicans had been in control or had a say in the Senate, they would have stopped this, primarily to protect the Conservative Party, which is their auxiliary wing. The Work and Families Party had been the auxiliary wing of the Democrats, but since they had, you know, ran Cynthia Nixon in the primary, the governor thought it was time to, you know, make him grovel and bow down and, you know, get back in line. You mentioned libertarians, and I do understand that you guys have sued over this. What's the possibility that litigation will come in and stand up to the Democrats and restore democracy in New York State?
You know, we do have a joint lawsuit with the Libertarian Party challenging this law. It's not really clear what's going to happen. You know, the judge hasn't heard the case yet. But we do know that a ruling that came down last month in a similar case that the Working Families Party and the SAM Party put forward was not, you know, very favorable to striking down this law. So even though we're very hopeful, this might be a protracted process of litigation if we can't get that 130,000 or 2% of the vote.
Now, one thing in New York State, actually nationwide, you know, we, of course, do not vote for president as voters. I, you know, try to explain that to people all the time. They sort of nod their head. Yes, we vote for Electoral College, but it doesn't really grasp. Mm-hmm. And since it doesn't make any difference whether you win by one vote or 2 million votes, which is what Clinton won 4 years ago, mm-hmm. the Democrats get all the Electoral College votes. Since people don't have to worry about Electoral College in New York State, is that convincing more people to, you know, save a progressive third party from the machinations of the Democrats to try to prevent independent progressive third parties?
Yeah, you know, I think that with the people that we've talked to, when they start to understand that the Green Party could just disappear after November 3rd, and they also hear that Joe Biden is ahead by 30 points in New York, they understand that, you know, 130,000 votes is something that they can contribute to. So I think that people have been very positive, and, you know, I think we're working towards getting that 130,000 or 2% in the next, you know, what do we have now? 27 days, 26 days.
We have about 2 minutes left, so I'm going to ask you the going away question and also give me your website after this.
Sure.
But people will say, well, wait a moment. You know, so two progressive third parties are not going to exist in New York State. We should vote for the Working